Welcome to MPC's podcast, where we share our Sunday sermons with you, exploring how God's word is applicable to our everyday life.
So we're looking, as you know, we're doing a series titled Magnificat. And what I'm going to do, I'm just going to switch this light off here, so we might see this a bit clearly, hopefully. And we're looking at Mary's song. And as we know, I believe that Mary's song provides us some amazing truths that we can get hold of as a church to live the life of happiness, the fulfilled life that Mary lived. You know, as a child, and most of you know this, I loved astronomy. Okay, I love stars, I love space. I don't know if it's because, you know, on my birthday is the best night for seeing shooting stars. I don't know. Now, if you go into Google and type in what is the best night to see shooting stars, you'll know the date of my birthday anyway. Or if it's because of the size of space and looking at the vastness, you know, during the winter time you see the constellation of Orion, and there's a star that has like a reddish glow. It's called Betelgeuse. Now this star, Betelgeuse, is 700 times bigger than our own sun. Isn't that amazing? So can you imagine if our sun was Betelgeuse? We'd be getting very hot. And 600 light years away, and then there's another galaxy outside of our own Milky Way galaxy called the Andromeda Galaxy, and that's 2.5 million light years away. And when we look, in fact, Alan earlier on read Psalm 8, and you know, when the psalmist said, when I consider the work of your hands, when I consider the heavens, and when I consider all that you've done, what is man that you are mindful of me? The son of man, that you actually care for me. Isn't it amazing? And I find that when we look at the heavens, you know, when we look at the stars, when we look at the vast distances, I feel small. And I start to get a healthy perspective that, hey, maybe I'm not as important as I think I am. You see, humility keeps us grounded. Keeps us grounded. And I believe it is an integral aspect, the element of our lives that we're to grow in to find a happy life, but it's also something that we need to work constantly at. And so from Mary's song, we've been, as I mentioned, we've been looking at what are some of the keys to finding lasting happiness. We've seen that it's important that we have a servant's outlook to life. And last week, we looked at the importance of making God bigger in our life. You know, that we ponder on God's holiness and his majesty and his glory and his goodness. And that's so important in our life. But today, I want us to look at the reality that humility gets us on track with God's promotion. So when we start living and walking in the humility, God starts to promote us. Okay? So we're going to read again verses chapter 1, verses 46 onwards. And I haven't got the whole of Mary's song on the screen here. I'm just going to put on the screen the verse that we're looking at this morning. But I'm going to read from the beginning, and this is what we read. Mary said, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. He has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed." And then she says, "For the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him. From generation to generation, he has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered," so this is the verse we're looking at. "He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones. He has lifted up the humble." Wow. Now, I am aware that when you preach a message on humility, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, okay? Because I'm telling you, hey, guys, this is how you can achieve humility. And you could be really proud of yourself. My dad sent me some jokes. If you know anything about my dad, he's a joke machine. And I said, "Dad," he cracked some jokes to me. I said, "Come on, send me these jokes." And this is what he says. "My most recent book, Humility and How I Achieved It." Here's the next one. the 10 most humble people I know and how I taught 9 of them. And the last one, I am truly proud of my humility. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Talking about humility, how we can become humble, because the essence of humility is that we're not thinking about ourselves, isn't it? The essence of humility is that we're thinking about who God is and his glory and thinking, being other-centered. And throughout the Bible, there's often a strong sentiment that God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And we see here that in Mary's words, that God opposed the proud by scattering them. Like you scatter seeds on the soil, or the sheep are scattered over the hills. God sends the proud into a state of disarray. But, however, the God gives grace to the humble. Now, it's important to realize, when we talk about pride, which is obviously the opposite of humility, we understand what pride is not. You know, we're not saying that, you know, when a parent is proud of their children because their child did really well in an exam, obviously that's a good example of pride. When God the Father said of his son, "This is my son in whom I am well pleased," we wouldn't be accusing God of pride, wouldn't we? You know, when Paul, often in his letters, he would write to his churches, and sometimes to the churches, he would say, "Hey guys, I'm really proud of you. Okay, I'm proud that you're standing in the faith and you're walking with me." You know, these are all positive examples of pride. Eddie the Eagle. Remember Eddie the Eagle? Some of you may not remember him. 1988 Winter Olympics. The only British contender who had the guts to dare to do the ski jump. And against all the odds, he came last in every competition, came last. But boy, he had audacity. He had courage to go up that thing and to ski and think, "What, man, that's crazy, man. I couldn't do that." But he did it. Well, have you ever seen the film when Eddie the Eagle comes back home? His dad's right there. Where are you from? "I am Eddie the Eagle's dad." Just that sense of healthy sense of pride. Of course, this is the positive example of it, where something good has been done, or we're pleased that someone has accomplished something. But when Mary speaks of pride here, it isn't the sort of pride of accomplishing something good, but it is the pride of comparison, where we compare ourselves with others. That I think I'm better than that other person, or I'm inferior to that person. Actually, inferiority is another form of pride, which we're going to look at. But the essence of this type of pride is this. It is saying, I want to be like God without trusting in God. I want to be like God on my own terms. And in doing so, I actually want to become my own God. And that sort of pride, God says, okay, if that's what you want, hey, there's only room in this universe for one God, and that is the Lord. I will oppose you if that is what is resident in your heart. We see the example of this, don't we, in the Genesis narrative. Right at the very beginning, I believe it was the root sin that led to the fall. You know, the serpent came to Eve. And the serpent said, "Hey, Eve, you know what? God doesn't really want you to be wise like him. Okay? God's hiding something from you. Because he knows if you eat of the fruit, you'll be wise like him." And Eve, looking at the fruit, desiring that it was for good, she took of the fruit and she ate of the fruit. She obviously disobeyed the command of God. But what was the root of it? She wanted to be like God without trusting in God. She disobeyed the Lord. And as you know, Adam was complicit in the whole thing, and he also committed the same sin. And this is what the essence of pride is. It's trying to be like God without trusting in God and doing things his way. Now, pride has two manifestations in the human heart. The first manifestation of pride is boasting. Okay? And boasting really is pride's expression of how successful I am. Look at how good I am. Look at what I have done. Look at what I've achieved. Hey, you know what? You should respect me. You should bow down before me. You should admire what I've done because, hey, look what I've accomplished with my resources and my strength and my abilities. And it is constantly drawing attention to itself, and it's developing a superiority complex. Has anyone met anyone with a superiority complex? Do you like them? Do you get on with them? And often you see this amongst the rich or the powerful or maybe some famous celebrity. There is this superiority complex. Yet, interestingly, John Piper wrote a book called Desiring God, and he said this: there's another side to pride as well. It's not necessarily the pride of boasting, but it's the pride of self-pity. And the pride of self-pity is basically saying it's pride's response to suffering or misfortune in one's life. It comes from a wounded ego. It's not fair. I don't deserve this. I deserve better than this. Why does this happen to me? Why can't it happen to anyone else? It's just not fair. Why is no one paying attention to me? Why is no one paying attention to what I'm going through? It's just not fair. See, self-pity is the response of unapplauded pride. It's the same root. It comes from the same source. And it is this pride of comparison that God opposes, that God is against. I've said this before, I think a couple of weeks ago. Pride is like carbon monoxide. Now, if you know anything about carbon monoxide, you don't know it's there. Okay, you can't smell it, you don't know it's there, but it's there. And pride is like carbon monoxide in our lives. It slowly kills us. We don't see it, but everyone else does. Everyone around us notices it, and they pick up on it. It was a psalmist who said this: though the Lord is exalted, he looks kindly on the lowly. Notice that. He looks kindly on the lowly. Though the lofty or the proud, he sees them from afar. And that is exactly where God keeps the proud, afar. He keeps them afar. God cannot hang out with proud people. God does not commune with people where there is pride issues in the heart. And so God says, I will oppose pride. I find out, you know, when I look over the course of my life and I realize the times when I said things or did things that I regret or, you know, things that I may be ashamed of and, you know, just messed up. And I look at what happened and I look back before what happened, I realize there was always a common denominator. There was an issue of pride in my heart that needed to be resolved and dealt with. And I believe that sometimes God will let us run the course of our race in pride. Because you know what? When we're proud, we're not listening to anyone, aren't we? We're just doing our own thing. We're not listening to anyone. And I think sometimes that God will allow us to run the course of our pride until we make a train wreck of things. Because sometimes that's the only way that God will get our attention. And often it's not until we're at our wits' end and we humble ourselves that we turn back to the Lord. We turn back to the Lord. And you know what? The moment we turn back to the Lord, the moment we say to God, hey, God, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. I messed up. The moment you do that, you are already on the track to progress. You're already on the track to promotion. The psalmist said this: the Lord takes delight in his people. And listen to this. He crowns the humble with victory. Think about that for a moment. If you had to choose working for a boss who was an egotist or thoughtful, someone who was opinionated or empathetic, if you had to choose between a selfish narcissist or someone who was selfless, who would you choose? Well, I guess we would choose the latter. We would choose to work for the person who is thoughtful, empathetic, selfless, all of which are qualities of humility. See, humility in someone else gets our attention, doesn't it? And it earns our respect, which is actually why humility is such important to a quality to grow in. People, you humble people, treat others with respect. They see others. They see value in others. They're color and status blind. They relate to the janitor who works in the office in exactly the same way as they would with the CEO. Okay, because they see value and dignity in all people. They're always at a place where they're willing to learn something new. They're always willing to see things from another person's perspective. And if someone points out their blind spots, they don't get defensive. Okay, they might even just humor themselves a little bit about it all. These are qualities of humility. And it's precisely these qualities of humility that doesn't just allow you to grow spiritually, but it also allows you to grow in every aspect of life. Humility wins the respect of others. But more importantly, I want you to notice this, humility gets God's notice as well. God befriends humble people. God can't work with proud people. He can't work with people who are too filled with their own self-importance. But he does befriend the humble people. Moses was God's friend, as was Enoch. In fact, Enoch walked with the Lord all his life. Okay, he walked with the Lord. And then one day, God said to Enoch, "Hey, Enoch, you know, you're so close to my residence today. Why don't I just take you home to be with me?" And Enoch did that. He came home to be with his Lord, just taking up to glory. Abraham, God said of Abraham, "He's my friend. He's my friend." Going back to Moses again, the Lord said of Moses, "Moses is the most humble man on this planet. I can talk to him face to face as a man talks to man. Normally, I speak to people in dreams or visions or symbolism, but I can talk to Moses face to face as a man. Why? Because he is a man of humility." Moses, Enoch, Abraham were all friends of God because there was humility in their life. They were on the track of God's promotion. They weren't just blessed. They were super blessed. They were blessed beyond imagination. So we say that Mary was the most blessed woman who ever lived, not just because she brought God incarnate into the world, and boy, that's something, isn't it? It probably doesn't get better than that. But also because she was also a woman of deep humility. So given that humility is of such importance in getting God's promotion in our life, how then do we grow in humility? Now, I know this is a double-edged sword, okay? How can I achieve humility? But let's keep this in mind. How can we grow in humility? Well, the first thing I believe that we need to do is this. We need to be absorbed with God's glory. You see, proud people are too preoccupied with themselves drawn into what their world, that they don't realize that actually the first step to growing in humility is actually to be thinking more about someone else or something else than what they are doing. That someone else could be a spouse, it could be their children, it could be their parents in the work context, it could be their clients or business associates or other relationships that they encounter each day. And it's good, I'm sure we all agree, to be thoughtful of others. But humility, as I mentioned earlier on, can be defined and understood as thinking more of others than ourselves. Or it could be that, you know, there's nothing wrong with thinking about your career or a hobby or an interest. All these things are good. But if we're not careful, we could take something that is good and make it into an ultimate thing. And that's when it doesn't become a healthy thing. You see, all these things, your spouse, your family, your career progression, your health, your financial securities, none of them are wrong in and of themselves. But none of them will be able to satisfy the deepest longings of your heart. Only God can do that. Only God can do that in your life. And Mary understood this. And that's why when she exclaimed that he has scattered those who are proud in the inmost thoughts, she implicitly realized that pride is the result of not giving God his proper place in our life. And we've seen, haven't we? Last week we saw that Mary was obsessed with God's glory. She just magnified God. She made God bigger in her life. And, you know, her soul rejoiced in the Lord. Her spirit rejoiced in God, her Savior. And so the foundation that And the most important thing that you can do to maintain humility, to get on track with God's promotion, is to put God first. Put God first in your life. The clinical psychologist Henry Cloud, he did some studies on people who were successful in life, you know, people who made it to the top. And often we can get these preconceptions, can't we, that the successful people that must be filled with their own self-importance. But very often that is not true at all. And he found this, that people who have made a success in life aren't necessarily the most talented people, aren't the most smart people, aren't the most clever people. But he says they all have, what he says, a common acceptance or belief in a transcendence value. In other words, they believe that there are some things in life that are bigger and more important than they are. And what could be bigger and more important in our lives than God? And giving God his place in our lives. A Navy warship was sailing in the sea, and it was a foggy day, it was a foggy evening. And in the distance, they could see a faint light. Okay, and as the boat is sailing, the light is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the admiral's at the deck, and he's kind of wondering what this light is and whatever. And the next minute, he receives a message over the radio. And the message says, excuse me, vessel traveling at 18 knots at 230 degrees. Can you adjust your course immediately, please, by 30 degrees? And so the admiral gets onto his radio comm, and he responds to the vessel. He says, excuse me, no, we're not going to adjust our vessel by 30 degrees. You need to adjust your vessel by 30 degrees. And he gets to respond. And he says, negative. You adjust your course by 30 degrees. And then the admiral says this, I am an admiral of Her Majesty's Navy. You adjust. And then he says, and what is your rank? And the guy comes back and says, well, I'm a Coast Guard. Well, Admiral says, I suggest then that you adjust your course by 30 degrees. And the Coast Guard says, no. You adjust your course by 30 degrees. Well, by this stage, the Admiral is seeing red. Who does this guy think he is? Does he know who he's talking to? And the admiral responds, we are a warship. We're heading in your direction. You adjust your course 30 degrees. To which he got a reply and he said, we, sir, are a lighthouse. Being absorbed with God's glory is about honoring and respecting God for who he is. And many people live their lives as if God does not exist. They don't even give God the second thought of the day. And the result is that their lives are crashing into lighthouses. And so it is of great importance that we are absorbed by his glory. Otherwise, we have the potential of becoming self-absorbed with no thought of God or others. See, humility in your life is characterized by about worshiping God and engaging God with both your intellect and your emotions and giving God his due place in your heart and life, being consumed with the majesty of who God is. And many people live their lives today and they just do not respect spiritual realities. They go through life and they just don't do that. They don't think of God at all. And the result is they just make a series of bad choices and decisions. And so we must be absorbed by God's glory and fame if we're to maintain humility in our lives. The second thing I believe that we need to do is this. Be attentive to your hearts. Mary highlights the origin of pride. And when she sings this, that he has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. Now, the word for inmost thoughts here is also the same word in the original language, meaning the imaginations of the heart. The imaginations of the heart. You know, I've said this before, that the heart of the issue is the issue of what? The heart, okay? The heart of the issue is the issue of the heart. And pride is a heart issue. That's something that we need to bring before God. And that needs to be dealt with. And so all of us here, occasionally, I think we all, from time to time, need a bit of spiritual heart surgery. We need to come before the Lord and say, you know, the psalmist said, I think it was 139, search me, O Lord. See, is there any offensive way in my heart and life, Lord? Is there anything that is not pleasing to you that God, I just need to bring before you, maybe need to put right before you. Because we know and understand that, that actually my heart really matters. Paul often says this. He says, examine yourselves. He says, to see whether or not you are in the faith. And clearly that examination has to start in your heart. Because your heart, out of the heart, flow the issues of life. The Bible often talks about the heart is like a well, it's a spring, it's a source. What comes out of your heart is going to affect the entire course of your life. You see, the heart is the seat of your thoughts and your emotions. And so it's so important that you pay attention to what's going on in your heart. Because what is going on in your heart is going to affect the course of your life. And this is particularly the case when we're looking at the affections of our hearts. The prophet Jeremiah said this. He said that the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Well, that's encouraging, isn't it? Really encouraging. But you know what the Bible does? This is why I love the Bible. The Bible tells you the truth. The Bible gives you a brutally honest diagnosis of your condition. It tells you things like it is. And so it's particularly the case, isn't it, that when we are looking at our heart, sometimes, you know, we may find ourselves that we're behaving in unusual ways, that ways that we don't normally, behave. And sometimes it takes someone to point out, hey, why are you getting on like that? You don't normally get on like that. Why? I'm not getting on like that. Anything? No, you. What's going on? Because there's stuff in our heart, isn't there, that maybe that we're not addressing. And it's coming out in the way that we are behaving. Solomon said this, that those who trust in themselves are fools. But those who walk in wisdom are kept safe. That's why, you know, pride is so ingrained into the condition of our hearts that left to our own devices, and we do follow our hearts, we're prone to making bad choices and bad decisions. Now, you're going to have to bear with me for a minute because I am going to boast here. I'm sorry. But I came up with an ingenious device, I must say. A great invention. Sorry, that's my moment to boast. And where I used to live, I'd go out in the garden during the afternoon or whatever, in the early evening. And during this time of the year, I was constantly being pestered, okay? Now, I tell you what, it was this most heinous of pests called the wasp, okay? Now, bees, I actually like bees, okay? At least they do some good for the economy, don't they, yeah? Yeah, we're on the side of the bees, okay? And at least if they sting you, well, you know, he's going to die, isn't he? But wasps! Wasps, no. I do not like wasps at all. I just think they do no good for this world. Well, I was trying to enjoy my afternoons and, you know, have a nice little cold drink. A wasp would come. I'd kill the wasp. Next minute, another wasp would come. I'd kill that wasp. And the next minute, two of the wasps would come. Kill those wasps. It was doing my head in. And it was taking away my peace and my joy. But then I had a eureka moment. An epiphany. I got a jam jar, okay? Kind of a handy jam jar. I stuck it in the back of the garden. I opened the lid, and this little wasp was flying around. You know, wasps, they like anything sweet, and pokes its head in the jam jar, tastes something sweet, goes off and tells its mates, hey, there's some jam here. They all come along. Next minute, there's all those wasps that are doing my head in. They're all going around this jam jar. And of course, because they're greedy and they're following their hearts, they're going further and further into the jam jar. But guess what? They got stuck in the jam. And they couldn't get out. What an ingenious device. I know. Come on, just give me an applause. Yeah. Yes. And you know what? My afternoons were bliss. Ah, no more wasps pestering me. It was lovely. Do you know what? Those wasps were following their hearts. And if you and I follow our hearts without taking notice of who God is, we can get ourselves into a lot of trouble. And that's why we need to regularly be examining and checking the motives of our hearts. And not making sure that we're not thinking and acting out of vain glory. Pride puts you on the path to nowhere. Humility gets you on the track of God's promotion. And so it is essential to examine your heart to ensure that you really are walking in the faith, in the way of wisdom. Maintain humility by being absorbed with God's glory. Let Him grab your affections. Being attentive to your heart with the Spirit's help, you know, ask Him to search your heart and to, as things come to the surface, to deal those issues before the Lord. But thirdly, let me encourage you also to do this. Be aware of humility's power paradox. Now, I'm going to explain what I mean by this, because humility presents us what some have called a power paradox, in that humility gives you influence. Humility gets you, after all, on the track of God's promotion. Humility actually, over time, gives you power. But this is where it becomes a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because with increased power and influence also increases the risk of pride creeping into the heart. Mary sings this. She sings that He has brought down rulers from the thrones, but has lifted up the humble. Those who are seated in powerful and privileged positions, God is able to bring down. We see this quite often. You know, when you're down, the only way you can go is up. But when you're at the top of the perch, the only way you can go is down. Unless, of course, you continue in humility. And so remember that God gives authority. God gives power. God gives responsibility. God gives, I believe, us a measure of influence. And as much as He has given it to us, He can also take it away. Humility will bring you to a place of influence and power, but you need to stay in humility if you are to continue in that influence. Oh, the pride will creep into your heart, and it will have the tendency of corrupting the heart. You know, there is truth in the saying, I believe, that power corrupts. You know, that's why the American fathers were so wise when they wrote the Constitution, to make sure that no president can stay any more than two terms. Because they understood that if you have a president going on indefinitely, power will corrupt the heart. Solomon put it like this: pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. You know, it was Colonel Gaddafi, I think it was about 8 years ago, who self-proclaimed himself to be the King of Kings of Africa. Do you know, it was only a few weeks later that his nation rose up against him, and he would die the most humiliating death in the streets of Libya. I think it was Phil who said last week that John Lennon famously said, "I am more famous than Jesus." Didn't he? A few days later, his life ended when he was killed by a gunman. Humility will open doors of opportunity to you. It will get you on the path of God's promotion. But it is crucial that to maintain humility in your life, you must be absorbed of God's glory. You must attend to your heart, but you also must be aware of the power paradox that humility brings into our lives. When Billy Graham was at the apex of his influence and power, and it's said that he's probably spoken to more people in any given moment than any other person in history, and he's spoken to millions in his TV crusades, and he's spoken to the lives of successive U.S. presidents, spoken to the lives, and at the apex of his power and influence. And there are many of his peers, many other people in ministry who were, you know, doing well and succeeding, but then they were falling morally and making a mess of things. Someone asked Billy Graham once, "Hey, Dr. Graham, how is it that you can have such an enduring influence at such high levels of office in a land. And he said simply this. It's quite simple, he said. Every day when I get up in the morning, I humble myself under the mighty hand of God. I humble myself under the mighty hand of God. I believe that this is something we all need to do, don't we? Every day. Humble ourselves under God's mighty hand. Before Jesus rose from the dead, before he was given the name that is above every name, before he was exalted to the right hand of the Father and earned the rightful title of King of Kings and Lord of Lords, he humbled himself. He came into this world, the womb of Mary. He lived a life of exemplary servanthood, even going to the cross. And so the most important step that we can all take this morning to get on God's promotion path for our lives is to humble ourselves towards Jesus. To be willing to say, Lord, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. To actually agree with Jesus as to what constitutes sins. Because sometimes we want to debate with God. Well, surely God, that's not wrong and that's okay. And God says, no, that's wrong. You need to reject that. To have an agreement with the Lord and say, okay, God, I will be willing to take on board what you have to say. I humble myself. I ask for your forgiveness. I repent of those things that I know are wrong. And I put my entire trust in you, Lord Jesus, and what you accomplished for me on the cross. That is the most important thing we can do, friends, to get ourselves in the path of humility. And then we can sing with Mary, he has lifted up the humble, and know that God will give you more influence than you ever dared to imagine or dream of. Because you've placed your trust in him.
Thank you for listening to MPC's podcast. If you enjoyed this one, then please do subscribe. You can find out more about our church on the website mpconline.org and at our Facebook page, Mansfield Pentecostal Church.